This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Let's start with the Giants. Mixed feelings. I thought it was a game they really could have won. They were right in it. They made big mistakes. I thought parts of it, Chris, they played well. I thought parts of it they did not. The offensive line was an issue. Daniel Jones played well and then made grievous mistakes in the red zone. They had opportunities. It didn't work out. Overall, am I satisfied? God, no. Do I take away some positives from the opening game of Joe Judge? I think that it's fair to say that I do, yes.
Well, I think it was a winnable game, right? It's a fourth quarter game. When you talk about it being one possession at the start of the fourth quarter, I think that's exactly what you're looking for if you're a Giants fan. A lot of times last year you could look at those games and you could say the Giants really had no chance of winning them. But last night, to your point, there were actual situations that you could point out and say, you know what, if this break goes the Giants' way, then they have a chance. Now, unfortunately, they weren't able to capitalize in the first break of the game, which was that muff punt. And they got the ball at point-blank range, and they can't punch it in for a touchdown. But those are things, those are opportunities that you'll look at. And with experience, you hope that Daniel Jones and this Giants team can find a way to cash in. Because the story of last night's game to me was the turnovers that the Giants had and not being good in sudden change situations. Right? When you had the interception by T.J. Watt, the Steelers end up converting that into a touchdown. When you had the situation with the muff punt, their defense held your offense to only 3 points in that situation. And then you turn the ball over at the goal line after having a 19-play drive and marching all the way down the field, and then the Steelers are able to turn that drive into points. So Steelers had 10 points off of your turnovers. You only had 3 off of the one that they made. That's just something that can't happen. But again, I think that's something that will happen with experience. The Giants will get better in that regard. But last night, to me, I saw a lot of things that you could point to and have reason for optimism if you're a Giants fan.
Yeah, the most disappointing part for you, Dave, is, I mean, you wasted Leonard Williams' only sack of the season.
In game one, I thought he played really well, actually. Listen, I'll beat him up when that's necessary. I thought he played well. I thought a lot of Giants played well. Look, Steelers are good. I don't know that you're going to face a lot of defensive fronts that are better than that. And in that, grouping of 5 offensive linemen, their first ever start together, I mean, they were not good. No one's going to argue that. I thought the left tackle played well. I thought the rookie, for the most part, held his own. So, look, Rick, you can beat up Leonard Williams, and I will when he's not good. I thought he was fine last night. I thought Dexter Lawrence played well. I thought the defense was actually pretty good for the Giants.
No, I'm not trying to beat him up. I was trying to make a joke, but apparently today, Tuesday, when your team loses, you get all serious.
Oh, please.
So yeah, my team loses?
He is being really sensitive.
Oh, my. I mean, that's okay. No, hey, how you guys doing? Let's get right into the game, and you're all serious now, breaking it down.
I don't care how you're doing. I want to talk about the Giants. I want to get right into it.
Well, have the same energy when we're talking about the Jets, then.
I had lots of energy yesterday.
No,
you were
had
the
no
one that
energy.
Was defeatist.
You were a wet blanket yesterday. Now, all of a sudden, you want to break this thing down to a fine powder.
Powder.
Because it's the Giants.
Powder.
Your running back stunk, all right? Your running back was bad. Obviously, they tried to shut him down. He was bad. He had minus 3 yards in the first half. I thought your quarterback was good. I think he's got a real relationship with Slayton. Ingram, he's an anomaly to me, man.
He stunk last night.
No,
you talk about bad.
He was awful last night. I'm over Evan Ingram. I'm
over
the potential. I'm tired of waiting for him to realize that potential that made Jerry Reese draft him with the 17th overall pick. Like, when they tried to get him involved in the offense last night, nothing but bad things happened. As a matter of fact, the only positive thing that happened with Evan Ingram was the DPI he was able to draw off of Joe Hayden in that second quarter. But other than that, he was a net negative, man. I mean, they tried to get him involved. The first, second down of the game, he ends up dropping a pass. Now, they end up converting on that third down. But then he has a situation in the goal line. They dial up a play for him, and he decides to sit down on the route in the end zone rather than moving with Daniel Jones and uncovering away from the defense. Like, let's stop trying to force feed Evan Ingram, man. You got tight ends that are more than capable. I thought Caden Smith looked great in the run game and the passing game last night. Let him be your primary tight end.
Yeah, he stunk. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And you're right. Second play of the game. I mean, hit him in the hands. Now, fortunately, they completed that third down pass for the first down. But, I mean, he was missing blocks. He was dropping passes, offensive pass interference, not running that route in the end zone properly. I mean, enough, Chris. You're right. Enough of, well, he's got talent. At some point, you got to make plays. And this is year 4. And I'm sorry, he's just not that good. That's my take on Evan Ingram. He's just not that good.
I feel watching Evan Ingram, because you see the talent and you've seen flashes. Watching him reminds me of watching Gary Sanchez for the Yankees. Like, at what point is it going to click in? Because he's got all the talent in the world. And Chris, the play you're talking about in the end zone where, you know, T.J. Watt makes a nice play to kind of get in that lane, that's all on Evan Ingram.
Yeah, because I mean, Daniel Jones can't make that throw. Quarterback.
That aggravated the hell out of me because that was
should've.
Such
it
a
was
big
frustrating.
Series. It was
you
a
can't
big
get
series.
That. You can have first and goal at the four and come away with 3 points against a team like that. You're not good enough to make mistakes like that. I mean, the Giants, listen, Baltimore can do it. Kansas City can do it. There's plenty of teams that can have opportunities, squander them, and be fine. The Giants are not that team. They were inside the five-yard line twice last night and came away with 3 points. That is absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the turning point. I think the game started to turn at the end of the first half, that two-minute drive.
Yes.
Because Ben in that offense looked out of sync. Like, you could tell he was, you know, he had some nerves, yeah. And he was off. But all of a sudden, it clicked into that two-minute drive. And then from there, I mean, that offense started grooving. But, I mean, in those situations, though, Dave, I mean, you have a running back that you took second overall. I mean, that's kind of where you're going to need to – and I get the whole plan of that game was let's stop Saquon Barkley. He's the catalyst. But, I mean – doesn't he have to be better than he was last night if this team has any chance?
Yeah, but how much blame goes on him and how much goes on the offensive line, Chris, is the question.
Well, here's the thing. I don't even know if I necessarily want to blame Saquon or the offensive line, although Saquon could have been better in some situations. He had a couple passes that he dropped, and that's completely unacceptable. But, I mean, Dave, you talked about it in our show yesterday. That front seven for the Pittsburgh Steelers is pretty stout, and it turns out that they didn't miss Javon Hargrove because Tyson Alualu stepped in, and he was a man-child on Nick Gates lined up in the zero nose. But I guess my biggest thing with that is if you recognize that you're not going to be able to get movement at the point of attack with direct runs, then why not go with perimeter runs? Why not challenge the force of the Pittsburgh Steelers defense? Why not use angles in order to block guys rather than asking them to use muscle? To me, the crack toss that they ran to Saquon Barkley on that first series, they should have featured more of that. Like, they should have got more of that involved, but they didn't. And you could see Jason Garrett wanted to go with some tempo against that Steelers defense to try to standardize some of the looks that you were seeing. But because you had the negative plays in the run game, the tackles for loss, and because you had incompletions, you weren't able to stay with that up-tempo offense. And so I think that's when, you know, Mike Tomlin started dialing some things up that made it a little bit difficult for that offense. But to your point, you got to find a way to get Saquon Barkley involved more. I mean, even if it's not going to happen in the running game, he's got to be more involved in the passing game, whether it be screens, whether it be lining him up as a wide receiver and throwing him bubbles, whatever it is, you got to try to find ways to get him the ball in space because you saw how special he was when he got out in the open field.
Well, right. I mean, they ran that beautiful
the guy's
screen
spinning.
Play.
Yeah, screenplay, the guy's spinning, he's hurtling over people. I mean, Saquon Barkley is electric, but again, the Giants aren't going to win many games if Saquon Barkley gets held in check. What do you have, under 70 total yards yesterday? I said the Giants would win that game last night if he had over 150 total yards.
Yeah, he wasn't even close to that. But you're right, you mentioned that screen. And yeah. Rick, they ran it beautifully, right? They fake to the left, they go back to the right, he gets into space. Did they run that play again? Did they run anything like that again? Like it felt to me like they were not creative at all in trying to get him into space. And yeah, I was hoping it would change from last year to this year.
Yeah, but I think and Chris mentioned it. This is one of the better defenses in the National Football League, right? And you heard, and the first thing I actually thought when I heard the clip, and I think Brian's got it, you know, after the game, you had Coach Tomlin talking about what the game plan going into it was. And, I mean, he said, we're not going to let Saquon Barkley beat us. If we can shut him down, we can win this football game. He's the catalyst of that team. And the first thing I thought to myself, has any coach ever said that about any player for the New York Jets? There's not one. I mean, no. There's not one.
Well, it doesn't exist.
But that's, again, as bad as Saquon was, and he needs to be better. He needs to be better catching the ball. He can't have those drops. I get it. The offensive line still isn't, you know, hasn't gelled yet, isn't great, but you drafted him second overall. Like, everyone knows that Christian McCaffrey's going to get the ball. He makes it work. Like, he's got to be better picking up the blitz.
Yeah,
he had one play yesterday where Hilton comes in and kills your quarterback. But because the focus of that defense is, and Tomlin actually says too, like, we're going to leave, you know, it could affect our secondary because they're going to be asked to do a lot because we're going to focus on the run. But it makes Daniel Jones's job throwing the football easier because they're all focused on Saquon. It makes the wide receiver's jobs easier. There's no one on the Jets that makes anyone's job easier on the offensive side of the ball. That was my first thought after that game when I heard that, and it aggravated me. But no, listen, you have both New York football teams lost by 10 points, and they
completely different games.
Could not feel differently. And I got on Twitter last. Oh, they both lost by 10. Same? No, not the same. Not the same. And I'm not sitting here waving the flag for the Giants. They made a lot of mistakes, and there were things that they absolutely have to correct. And I don't think they're going to win a ton of games this year. But if you watch the Jets and you watch the Giants and you think, oh, same exact games, you're an idiot. I mean, there's no two ways to put it. Like, you just don't understand how sports works at all. Because the Jets were non-competitive, and the Giants were at the four-yard line late third quarter, 4 yards away from taking the lead in that football game. So just please, can we not have that conversation today? I beg of you, can we not have that conversation?
To me, the complexion of the game would have been completely different, Dave, if Daniel Jones doesn't throw that interception to T.J. Watt. I mean, your defense was able to get a stop. You're coming off of a big punt return by Jabril Peppers. You got all the momentum in your favor, and you got a 7-point lead. Like, if you don't make that mistake, you're probably talking about this game looking a whole lot different. It's just one of those things. Daniel Jones can't afford to turn the ball over and give away all the momentum that they created after they got that big play over the top to Slayton. You can't allow something like that to happen.
And he did it twice.
The game completely turned. And then I think it's fair to second guess the zero blitz that Patrick Graham called on third down in the red zone. Like, I didn't like the idea of putting any of the Giants cornerbacks, let alone a guy that got there a week and a half ago, on one-on-one coverage on Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, I don't like that. You had two good stops on first and second down. I mean, go ahead and drop your guys into coverage. You're in the red zone, so it's a condensed area. Force Ben Roethlisberger to make a tight window throw. He had shown up until that point in the game that he was rusty. And whether it was the nerves, whether it was the elbow, it doesn't matter. He wasn't playing up to the level that we're accustomed to seeing Roethlisberger play at. And I feel like you gave him a gimme situation, one-on-one coverage, allowed them to get some confidence, allowed him to get some confidence. And then from there, the Steelers' offense started to get off the mat. But you had those guys pinned down. The complexion of that game would have been completely different had that T.J. Watt interception not happened. I stand by that.
Yeah. I mean, you're up 10-3. You had the great play to Slayton. You scored the touchdown. You get the ball back. You have it. And you're hoping to move down the field and at least get some kind of points. You turn it over, and the complexion changes there. They're like three or four plays. And like I said, they're not good enough to have those go in the wrong direction. There's that interception. There's not getting more than a field goal late in the first in that drive that they started at the four-yard line. There's the drive late in the third quarter. There's that drive at the end of the first half where the Steelers scored the touchdown. The Giants were right there. Now, I know that they were down 26-10, and Pittsburgh scored 23 unanswered. If you play that game 10 times, do you win it more than a couple? Maybe not. But they were right there, and that's a good football team. So do I come out of this game, screaming the Giants stink, they're awful? No. I think that if you look at it, Rick, there's a lot of positivity to take from that game yesterday. They lost, and they're probably not going to win more than five or six or seven games at the most this year. But I take some positivity away from that game.
Yeah, but I think that really is the only similarity between the Jets and the Giants. Is how you feel about your team. Because, again, I mean, the Giants are in the middle of a rebuild. I mean, I think they don't want to say it, but it seems like the Jets are rebuilding too. How you feel about your team is directly related to how you feel about your quarterback. Mm. And Sam Darnold did not look nearly as good as Daniel Jones did.
No.
Not nearly as good. I know there were some of the play calls that you may not necessarily like, but I thought that Jason Garrett, for the most part, did a good job with Daniel Jones. Like, why is it? I mean, I get Daniel Jones is a great athlete, and he's a big guy. I don't see any of that stuff with Sam. Sam Darnold's a good athlete.
Very.
I don't see any of that stuff with Sam Darnold.
Yeah, from an athleticism standpoint, I would say they're both right there. They're neck and neck. I don't look at Daniel Jones and say he's that much more athletic than Sam. Yet you see the Giants use a lot of play calls that allow him to show that aspect of his game and to try to put your offense in more favorable situations. I mean, Daniel Jones had a gutsy scramble in the third quarter, dude. I mean, gutsy scramble. That was in the middle of that long drive that they had 19 plays. And speaking of which, Rick, when you start talking about play calls by Jason Garrett, isn't that exactly what you want to see coming out of halftime in the first drive? Plays downfield, not to mention a third and 14 that you converted in the shadow of your own end zone. That's what you want to see. You want to see adjustments based on what that team has showed you in the first half and try to find ways to be able to take advantage of the weaknesses of those defenses. That's exactly what happened. I mean, those are the tangible signs that you can hold on to if you're a Giants fan. You're talking about a drive where you had four third down conversions and one fourth down conversion, and it took up 8 minutes and 50 seconds of game clock.
It was a great 18-play drive, and play 19 did not go as you wanted at all. And the thing that I found strange is the first down play was maybe their best run of the entire day. Right? Barkley ran from like the 11 to the 4. He had second and 3. Could have gotten a first down at the 1, and they rolled Jones left, and he's got to know. I know it's only his second year. Ricky
he was trying
has
to, he
to
saw,
know.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, you're right. That's not you can't make that throw, but you could see, I mean, Slayton was running in the back of the end zone. He made a bad decision. Bud Dupree made a good play.
Yeah,
it was a terrible decision, but you know what? Night. He didn't repeat the decision in the fourth quarter because he was in the same situation, rolling to his left in the red zone, inside the 10-yard line, and guess what? He threw the ball out of bounds. So, I mean, listen, I'm not saying that it makes it all better, but you recognize that the kid is still learning because it is game one of the second year of his pro career.
I will say it's a lot easier, at least for me, and I don't know how you guys feel, to watch a team like that, knowing that the expectations is that they're not going to have a great season. Like, if this was the Cowboys game and this was that for me, I'd be livid right now because the expectation is they're going to win 12 games, and Chris, you said they got to go to the NFC Championship game. I mean, this is what the Giants are. They're not a great football team. They're going to make mistakes. They played hard. The defense gave you signs. The offensive line, I mean, I really like what the rookie left tackle did for most of the game, especially in pass protection. Are there things to fix? Absolutely. Can you beat them up? You can. But overall, I think there's a lot of positivity to take away from that game.
No, there's a lot of positivity, especially when you look at the defensive side of the ball. We got to give them guys some loves. I mean, there were some miscues in the coverage. I mean, you could point to that two-minute drill that happened and a couple of other spots throughout the game. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, the defense flew around, man. They didn't aid any of the Steelers' scoring drives with penalties, which I thought was big. I mean, you saw some missed tackles, but those missed tackles didn't turn into big plays because you saw the pursuit. You saw what James Bradbury did to Benny Snell in the fourth quarter. He punched out that football.
That was a big play.
I mean, listen, if Juju Smith doesn't dive on that football, you could be talking about the Giants getting that yep. and turning it into a ball game. So, I mean, there were things to point to on the defensive side of the ball that you got to be excited about. 5 hits on the quarterback. We were sitting here all offseason talking about where's the pressure from the Giants defense going to come from. And the answer was it's going to come from everybody. It's going to come from the linebackers. It's going to come from the interior defensive linemen. It might come from the secondary. Everybody's going to get after it. But Patrick Graham has that reputation for wanting to run multiple defenses. That's what he did down in Miami. That's what he learned in Green Bay. And guess what? He's bringing that to the Giants. And we recognize that their pass rush is going to have to be by committee. But you did see them putting Ben Roethlisberger under duress yesterday. I thought Lorenzo Carter played a great game, by the way. I mean, he didn't get credit for that sack that Dexter Lawrence got, but he was the one that really caused it. But, I mean, there are a lot of things that you can point to that you can like about this Giants team. And, Dave, even though I don't think the Giants are a playoff-caliber team, I think the Giants are, you know, a 500-caliber team. I think the Giants are somewhere, you know, 7-9, 8-8 if things go well this season. And I think that's a solid step for Daniel Jones and for the overall program.
Absolutely. And Pittsburgh's good. I mean, that is – how many fronts are you going to face better than that, front sevens better than that over the course of the season?
Not many. I mean, San Francisco, Washington, but not many, Dave. To answer your point, not many. They're probably a top 5 front seven.
And you guys were competitive. I mean, that was a game where, I mean, you showed signs. You weren't lifeless. Like the Jets. I mean, I never at any point during the Jets game did I feel like they had a chance to win that game.
Because they never
ever.
Did.
They never
you
did.
You didn't feel like it because they never had a chance to win that game, ever. From the opening kickoff when they had the penalty. 3 and out, and then they trailed.
3 and out.
I mean,
3 and out.
Right, they trailed the whole game. They were down 21-0. They had no chance. The Giants had a chance. The Giants were very competitive yesterday.
Well, at least we could sit here on a Tuesday morning and pick out a, you know, a handful of plays that, you know, you can point to and say that was the difference between winning and losing, as opposed yes. to, I mean, we didn't have enough time yesterday to get
We would
everything.
Have to go on like a telethon, like a Jerry Lewis kind of thing to be able to get into the Jets issue.
No, in all honesty, you know how much I love the Jets. I saw enough in that 19-play drive from Daniel Jones in that offense to make me feel pretty good. I saw more in that one drive, in that 8 minutes and 50 seconds, than I saw in an entire football game from the Jets.
I think you're right.
I mean, that's the truth, and that's the truth.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it didn't end well. It was a bad decision. I think he would own that, you know, as long as the day is, but it was a good drive.
See, that's a situation.
Completed a lot of thirds, completed a fourth.
That's a situation, though, where, and I get it, like, I mean, they're stacked up against the run, but, I mean, that's a situation where, and you mentioned it, I mean, that was actually one of the better runs.
It might have been the best, the long run of the day.
That's when, I mean, your guy has to find a way. I mean, Saquon has to find a way. I mean,
you really
that's had
three downs to pick up 3 yards there and to have first and goal.
Twice, though. I mean, that was the second time in the game. I mean, you were inside the five on that turnover.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you were inside their five-yard line twice and came away with 3 points. You're not going to win a game like that. You're not.
No, that can't happen. I mean, the Giants don't have that kind of margin for error. We know that from a talent standpoint, they're still building. But, again, you could point to, you know, a handful of plays that if they go the Giants' way, you're talking about them winning that game. I mean, the Giants, they can't overcome the turnovers that they had. You can't make those kind of mistakes against a team like the Steelers. I mean, that is a championship organization. That's a championship-caliber defense. So, I mean, you realize you can't make those types of mistakes. And I'm sure that Daniel Jones recognizes that. Those interceptions, those are things that he could help. Now, T.J. Watt, he makes a hell of a play. But the one on the goal line, I mean, under the rest, that's just –
You throw it
it's
away.
It's just a bad situation. You can't make a good play out of that type of situation. Everybody was covered. You're rolling to your left. Bud Dupree is bearing down on you. Like, just throw the ball away and live to fight another down. You still got third down.
Yep.
So we'll see what happens on that. And if you know, worst case scenario, you don't make anything happen there, you can kick a field goal, come away with points.
And be down by three.
But not coming away with points and then, you know, deflating your defense like that and then those guys going out there and giving up another score – like that's just something that can't happen. You
change
can't
the entire complexion of the
you
game.
You can't have a 6-point swing like that.
Yep. DCR brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. 800-919-3776. We'll get to your calls in a second. Ricky said you wanted to hear Mike Tomlin on shutting down Barkley. Here is the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
We had a commitment, and we weren't going to be bashful about that commitment. We thought that guy was a catalyst for whatever that they were going to do offensively. We put our secondary in harm's way some in an effort to do so. But it's a team game. They embraced that challenge. We needed to stack the line of scrimmage. We need to bring people like Mike Hilton and so forth. And we did. We did what we thought was necessary to minimize his impact on the game.
They did a great job. I mean, I don't know what more there is to say. Was he great? No. Was the offensive line great? No. But I think a lot of that, Chris, was because the game plan was really, really good from Pittsburgh. And they told you. He will not beat us, and he did not beat them.
No, the game plan was good from Pittsburgh, but I don't think you should play into the strength of that Pittsburgh Steelers defense, which is why I say you got to try to get guys out in space. You got to try to make that front seven for the Pittsburgh Steelers move laterally rather than moving north and south, because you saw when the Giants had direct runs at them, there was getting a lot of penetration in that backfield. That's why I go back to the crack toss that they ran on the first series where Saquon picks up 7 yards. That ended up being the long run of the day. Like, those are the plays that you got to go to. Get guys out in space. Create angles. If Evan Engram can't block a guy straight up, I'm sure he can crack down on a guy and just get in the way. So why don't we just try doing that if you're insisting on him being an inline blocker? Those are the things that you could second-guess the coaching staff on. But, again, the Pittsburgh Steelers are a good team. You give them credit. But I really feel like the Giants had opportunities in that game, and had they not had a couple of miscues, we could be talking about a different outcome. And we can't say the same thing about the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets game on Sunday.
No, those could not have been two polar opposite games.
You can't compare the two games, even though both teams lost by 10 points.
Not at all. DCR brought to you by Mako. Roll out Refresh with Mako, where paint and collision repair is easier and safer. Let's get to some of these calls. 800-919-3776. Dan in Howard Beach. Dan, lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the call. Listen, I'm a big Jet fan, and I got to give kudos to the Giants. Just let me elaborate for a second. There are great run franchises, the Giants, the Niners, the Packers. You see that there's heart, there's passion in there, even though the Giants lost. See, I can't say the same for the Jets. See, the Jets are led by, and then that head coach. And fans are saying, oh, you know what? As long as we see Sam progress, the dude's not going to progress with a coach as such. The guy doesn't know what's going on. There was a play that Sam was rolling out to the right. He had to throw it out of bounds, but he didn't. Because there's a certain thought process when you're led by a horrendous head coach who has failed. and failed and
oh
failed.
Oh, my God. So is Dan, thanks for the call. I mean, we get it. The Jets are awful. The Giants were competitive. I mean, there's no comparing the two. I don't understand why today has to turn into the Giants were decent and the Jets were awful. We know that.
No, but Dave, there are Giants fans out there that are saying same old Giants after last night's loss, and I'm here to say
it didn't feel like that to me, Chris. It did not.
It's not the same old Giants. This is not the team that had the worst record in football over the last 3 years. That was a different team last night. They played with a different energy, and if you didn't see that, then you don't know what you're looking at.
I think you're right. I think the Giants, for the most part, played a good football game, and they made mistakes at crucial times.
Dave, but you expect that from a young team, though, Dave. You get that from a young team.
I know.
Team.
I know. Happens. And knowing that they're not going to win a ton of games and knowing that they're not going to compete for a playoff spot, they fought last night. And I think that's what a lot of Giants fans are looking for. And I don't think we're going to get a ton of Giants fans today, Chris, to call us freaking out about what they saw last night. I really don't. Dave, Long Island. Dave, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome, Dave. What do you got?
I mean, listen, you guys are definitely doing a good job of you know, bringing up the spirits, because it was a bumming loss last night, and they certainly had a lot of opportunities that they squandered. But I think, Rick, you made a great point that 19-play drive in and of itself was hope for, you know, for this season and for what's to come. I mean, even early on, I was thinking on the 3rd and 14 in their own zone, Jones threw the ball more than 14 yards to get the first down. I mean, that's something that we haven't seen for the past, you know, few years, where it's a dump off to the flat or a handoff to Saquon or something. I mean, Garrett called a play where he threw the ball 16 yards so that they could even get the first down. So just looking at that is positive, and I think, you know, hopefully good things to come.
Dave, would you like a spicy little Jets nugget?
Yeah. Are you talking to me or Dave, sure, the caller?
No, both. Just Dave's in general.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
And any
all
Dave,
Dave's,
yes,
listening.
Go ahead.
Give it to us.
All right, here's a spicy Jets nugget that may. Are you driving? If you're driving, pull over, because I don't want you to drive off the road. In two seasons under Adam Gase, the Jets have 60 more punts than TDs, which is the worst margin in the NFL.
Minus 60, huh?
That's, yeah, not minus good. 60 punts, right, to TDs. Yeah,
that's bad.
It's good stuff.
I feel like you're more upset today than you were yesterday.
Of course, I'm more upset.
Because it had baked in?
Oh, no, it's baked in. I'm teetering on a nervous breakdown until we get into that later. But, I mean, you're in year two of Daniel Jones. You have a completely new coaching staff, new offensive coordinator, new head coach, new defensive coordinator. I mean, year three of Sam Darnold, same head coach, same play caller. And those games were polar opposites.
Right. I mean, the play clock was not running down to one. You didn't come out of a timeout, a commercial break, and have the play clock run out and have a 5-yard penalty. I think the Giants had, what, Chris, four penalties last night?
Four penalties. Four penalties for 25 yards.
They were disciplined.
Yeah.
Right? Again, and maybe people disagree, and I think I'm being pretty fair. It's hard to look at what the Giants were last night and kill them. They're not as good as Pittsburgh, and in the big moment, Pittsburgh made the plays and the Giants didn't. But to kill them today, I don't know. I think it's kind of unfair. Obviously, the conversation today is the Giants, and for some reason, comparing that the Giants' loss was better than the Jets' loss. Let's take a listen to new head coach Joe Judge. What'd you think of your quarterback, Daniel Jones, overall last night?
Well, you know what? I mean, first off, I like the way he played aggressive. Okay. He stood in the pocket. It was obviously a strong rush coming at him all night. He played confident in there. He stood there as long as he could. He delivered some good, accurate passes for us. He had two throws I know he wants back, you know, down at the goal line. That's something we can't have happen. Look, I'll talk to Daniel a little bit more about it. I'll watch the tape, make sure we clean up everything involved. That's definitely something you can't have, 19-play drive and come away with no points, especially down there in a low red. That's not acceptable, but I'm proud of the way he played aggressive. I'm proud of the way this team on the bench stuck together.
I think fair, right? Fair analysis of what Daniel Jones was, Rick. He made some mistakes, and overall, I thought he played a pretty good game.
Yeah, that's a fair analysis.
Yeah.
That's what I expected to hear from him after that game. And I'm sure Daniel Jones would have said the same exact thing. I mean, that's a throw he can't make. I think the TJ Watt, that was just a great play. I mean, that's a really great play by a really good player. The one after the, you know, 19-play drive, that can't happen.
That was terrible.
That's not great. He's trying to make a play. He's trying to make a play, and he should know. I mean, it's, again, you can't make excuses for him. He's going into his second year, but still, that's a throw he knows he shouldn't make. And Bud Dupree made a good play on him.
Yeah, he's good, huh?
It'd be nice if they could chip Bud Dupree at some point.
Yeah,
like
just block him. Block him. Put a warm body on Bud Dupree. There are about four or five times where the guy didn't get touched by somebody in a blue jersey. didn't get touched, Dave.
Yeah, he was, I mean, he was very good last night.
He's enough to deal with when he's got a one-on-one situation with a blocker, run game or pass game. But when you don't touch him, I think there's a pretty good chance that he's going to be disruptive. Just saying. Whatever scheme that you got, Jason Garrett, I respect it. Listen, he's one of the better offensive minds in football, but you got to think players first, then plays. Get a body on number 48.
Yeah, yeah, he was running free all night long, really, in both the run game and the pass game. He was a game changer last night, and they did a bad job of blocking him.
Yeah, yeah.
Very
and
bad
on that
job.
One, and on that one with Saquon and pass pro, Saquon has got to be better. I know Bud Dupree is doing an up and under, but you got to be able to pick that up. Like, that's something that you should be able to do after your rookie year. I don't expect running backs to make those types of mistakes in year three. Especially not guys that you take with the second overall pick.
I know. Unless he dropped a couple of passes last night, he missed a couple blocks last night. He was not great. No one's going to argue that Saquon was great by any stretch last night. Phil in Jersey. Phil, you're next up on 98.7.
Thanks for taking my call, guys, on this beautiful day. My question is, in the first quarter, when Daniel Jones looked like he fumbled the ball and the Giants were able to recover it and get into the end zone, couldn't the Giants have challenged that was actually a touchdown there and not an incomplete pass?
Yeah. I guess you could, right?
They could have, yeah. They could have, and they made that point on the broadcast too.
Yeah, but in that moment, you're relying on whoever your replay guy is, to call down and let Joe Judge know.
You had a couple more downs too. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Listen, the play call that Jason Garrett dialed up for Evan Engram, that was a good play call.
Should have been a touchdown.
It was just poorly executed by Evan Engram.
You know what's so frustrating about Engram? He's a horrendous blocker.
Awful day.
So if you're not a tremendous asset in the passing game, you're a net negative. And to watch him go out there and not make plays in the passing game, I mean, he dropped the pass. The one at the goal line he's got to get open for. And then he had an offensive pass interference last night. He was terrible last night. I'm not sitting here killing the Giants. I think there's a few things that needed to be better. There's a few players that were not good. He's one of them. He was really bad, I thought, last night.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. You're disappointed in him, especially when you look at the way that Caden Smith looked. I mean, even Levine Toilolo looked better than Evan Engram. I mean, last night he was your third best tight end. And this is a guy that you used the 17th overall pick on a few years ago. You would think that he would be a little more motivated with the contract implications, in his production this season. But Evan Engram leaves a lot to be desired, man. He not only is he not a good blocker, Dave, he's not a willing blocker.
No.
Like, to me, I guess I could stomach it if the guy stuck his nose in there and he tried to give you an effort. But this guy's not even interested in blocking. To me, it's a little bit of a prima donna type of vibe coming off of him, and I'm not here for it. And it doesn't seem like that's the type of program that Joe Judge is trying to run. So, again, I know it's just one game. I don't want to overreact. But I don't know if Evan Engram is going to be long for this Giants team.
Canty, we both know.
Not playing like that.
Canty, we both know.
Not playing football like that.
Canty, we both know. If you're not great and you're not willing to stick your nose in there, I mean, there's no hope for you. No.
No hope. No hope.
He was not good. All right, we move on. Eli in Newark. Eli, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, folks. How you guys doing?
What's up, Eli?
First things first, I'm a New York football Giants fan. I can't let this go by. I got to thank Chris Canty for winning that Super Bowl. I really mean that too, bro. Last night watching the game, I was listening to Bob Popovich and Carl Banks during the game, right? And the one thing Carl Banks kept saying, he said, not for nothing, on defense, you got to admit them guys were flying around, a lot of energy and whatnot. They made some mistakes, he said, but they were mentally correctable. Okay. And, Chris, I remember you said once that Bill Parcells said something about all running backs running the same behind a bad offensive line. Sure, Saquon Barkley can play better. Okay, I understand that. But when you get dropped 2, 3, or 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, it's not totally your fault. I think they're heading in the right direction, so I'm not freaking out. They'll be just fine. They just need a little more experience, that's all. Thank you, fellas.
I'm not sitting here trying to mask over the issues on the offensive line. They were getting mauled at the point of attack by the Steelers front seven.
Gates was terrible.
They were getting mauled. Gates is bad. Gates is bad. I didn't expect him to look that bad. But they were getting mauled at the point of attack on direct runs. My thing was this. If you're Jason Garrett, understand the strengths of your offensive line. That's a big Steelers front. Don't try to run directly at them. Use angles and try to get leverage on that defense, get leverage on the force on the perimeter that way. That's why I said go with more crack toss, do more perimeter runs. That to me was the answer to the Steelers' front in terms of trying to get the running game going, and he just didn't see more of that. But, yeah, you can't get a running game going when you have that much penetration in the backfield. That's going to be hard.
I think it's just sometimes the style in which Saquon runs. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he's a big guy. He's not a small guy. I mean, he's Saquon's Barkley. Like, at a certain point, like, let's hit the hole.
You know, right.
He sometimes does that. Too much dancing.
I said it last night. There was one play where he probably could have lost a yard, right? Which you'd be disappointed by, but he lost four. Like, you can't do that. You can't give up yards in this game. You're not good enough. So he does a lot of dancing, and he looks to make every play the home run. I mean, he's very Barry Sanders-like, but he's not Barry Sanders, if that makes sense. You know, like, he plays like that. He's always looking for the home run. Sometimes you just got to say, I can gain a yard, and that's it. Or gaining nothing on this play is okay. He loses yards a lot of negative plays with him.
Yeah, you got to understand the value of a 3 or 4 yard run. Like, sometimes you're not going to be able to get, you know, 5, 6, 7 yards. You're not going to be able to pop the big one. Like, you got to understand, okay, you know what, let me just hit the hole. Even if it's just a gain or two, it's not a negative play. And as long as it's not a negative play, then Jason Garrett is going to be able to do what he would like to do, which is stay with that up-tempo. But when you have negative plays, when you have TFLs, when you have incompletions, you can't go up-tempo. You can't go no huddle. To me, that is exactly what you want to do versus a defense like the Steelers. Because they can throw a lot of different looks at you. When you go up-tempo like that, you standardize the looks. And you make it very vanilla in terms of the picture that your quarterback is looking at pre-snap at the line of scrimmage. So, yeah, I mean, listen, Saquon Barkley's got to be better. There's no way around it. Even though the offensive line was getting pushed back in his face, he's got to find a way to be better. He's one of the best players on the team, if not the best player on the team. He's got to find a way to put more of his imprint on that game.
Yep, I think we all agree with that. Jerry in Jersey, our favorite. Jerry, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
I'm Dave. This is Chris. Good to meet you.
I give the Giants a lot of credit last night. I'm not saying they played a great game because they didn't, but they showed some life. So I'm going to give some respect where respect's due. Now, what I seen last night from this front seven, and listen, I know it's the Giants, this front seven is fast. They're not just strong, they're fast, and they fly the ball. Another thing that's really sad that I seen was you had Ben Roethlisberger outrush Saquon Barkley. That is sad. That is sad. And the Steelers had a great game plan here, taking away Barkley. But you got to find a way, as Coach Joe Judge, you got to find a way to make Saquon do something. Do something.
Yeah, but don't forget too. I mean, this is what would concern you a little bit. Now, no. Every defense you play is not going to be nearly as good as the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, I would imagine that every single team the Giants play against, the goal of that defense is going to be to eliminate Saquon Barkley.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to get, I mean, it's not going to get easier. But the benefit of having a Saquon Barkley is exactly what Mike Tomlin said after the game. We're going to focus on shutting him down, but we're going to leave our secondary hung out to dry occasionally.
Right. Which happened a couple times where they got beat.
Yeah, which makes Daniel Jones' job easier throwing the football. And if Daniel Jones can continue to play, you know, eliminate that stupid turnover. Again, TJ Watt made a great play. The one in the deep red zone, that's unacceptable. No, he eliminates those plays. It continues to progress the way that he's progressed. Now, all of a sudden, you can't afford just to focus on Saquon Barkley. Because Daniel Jones is showing you enough in that passing game. Dude, that kid's willingness to stand in the pocket and stare down the rush is, at his age, incredible to me.
Yeah, he took a huge hit on a sack last night, too. And let's have a little positivity, did not fumble the ball at all last night, right, which was a huge issue last season.
There was one point in the third quarter you could see he was under the rest, and he focused on putting two hands on the ball.
He put two hands and, like,
covered
it up.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was deliberate, Dave, and that's because the kid has been working on it. Like, that's something that he was thinking about throughout the offseason, and I guess one of the signs of growth that you're looking for is that a player can improve on the mistakes that they made in the prior year. They actually go back in the lab and work on those things so they're not an issue. Remember Tiki Barber when he has that fumbling issue?
With Coughlin,
And then Tom Coughlin worked with him, and all of a sudden that went away, and he was considered one of the best backs in football for a 2 or 3 year stretch. Like, that's what you want to see from players. And so if Daniel Jones is taking it upon himself to improve those aspects of it, you got to think that eventually with the right coaching, this kid is going to turn the corner. Like, there are a lot of good things about his game that you're seeing on display. So Giants fans just got to be patient. It's going to translate to wins eventually. It's just going to take some time.
Yeah, I think you'd be hard-pressed to just analyze this game, Rick, and say that Daniel Jones didn't give you a lot of reason for optimism. Like, yeah, he made mistakes. Absolutely. No one denies it. But he looks like he's going to be the real deal.
He absolutely does. I mean, don't, again, and it's a glaring mistake, but I mean, on that 19-play drive, I mean, some of the throws he made and the plays he made with his legs were unbelievable. I mean, you can tell, watching him play as opposed to watching Sam Darnold play, you can tell which one of these quarterbacks has played the position longer and who's had better coaching. But you can tell that Daniel Jones fundamentally has been better coached than Sam Darnold.
Yes, it is obvious. It is. So Mike Tannenbaum is going to join us right at the 10 o'clock hour. We got to get to the calls. We'll get into a little baseball, a little NBA. Huge, huge game seven tonight between Denver and the LA Clippers. Chris, I would imagine you're all in on the Nuggets tonight, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm not worried if the Nuggets get to the Western Conference Finals.
No.
I am a little bit concerned about the Clippers. But here's what I will say, Dave. The Nuggets have won five straight elimination games going back to their series against the Jazz. Five straight.
Yep. Listen, they were down 3-1, came back and won that series. Down 3-1, came back and forced a game seven. They've done a great job in this postseason. Let's go to John in Valley Stream. John, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to comment on the Giant game. I got to say, you know, watching the game, I was kind of impressed. And I felt like they played as a team, and the continuity seemed like, in the right direction. And also Joe Judge's comments, like, after the game about, talking to Daniel Jones. I never heard that from Gase about Sam Darnold. The only thing I ever heard him say is that he came to my office and talked to me. It seems like this guy, Joe Judge, is a real player's coach. I think these guys are really buying into it. I just, if this is a baseline from where it's going to be, I feel we have a pretty optimistic, outlook on what this season and in the next couple of seasons are going to be. Thanks for taking my call, man. I just wanted to say that. Thanks.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. And Rick, I agree. I mean, watching what they were last night against a really good football team, first game for left tackle, Daniel Jones, first game of year two, I think there's a lot of, and we said it over and over, I think there's a lot of positivity to take away from the opening game for the Giants.
Yeah, there was a lot of positivity. There was a lot of positives. I mean, that was a competitive game. I mean, guys that you were hoping would play well played well, and there's some things that need to be corrected, which is, something I think we all expected.
Yep. Let's go to Andy and Merrick. Here we go. Andy, you're next up on 98.7.
Good morning, DCR. In advance of tonight's big NBA game, I have a four-pack of really terrific NBA questions. So put your heads together and tell me, who was the only NBA player with 2,000 steals and 2,000 blocks in their career?
Ooh. Ooh. That's a good question.
2,000 steals and 2,000 blocks.
Hmm. Huh. Where are you leaning, Dave?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean,
2,000 steals, 2,000 blocks.
I don't think Dwayne Wade has. He doesn't have.
No, you know the steals guys. I mean, you got.
Yeah, but Stockton. It can't be a point guard.
No, it can't be. It's not going to be Stockton. I would imagine not Kidd.
This has to be a big guy.
How many blocks did Scottie Pippen have? Did he have quite a few blocks?
Probably.
Yeah.
Nowhere near 2,000, though.
Nowhere near 2,000. Okay. All right. Relax, Andy. Relax. Hakeem?
Hakeem the nice. Dream.
Bam. Nice. I would not have gotten that. Good job. And he was a great defensive player.
Nice.
Attaway.
Nice.
Let's go. What do you
got? Kevin Garnett was close, but that's a nice job, Rick. Who is the only NBA player, the only player to lead the NCAA, the NBA, and the ABA in scoring?
Is it David Thompson?
No.
So it's
easy, Brian. Easy. We're just brainstorming here. Stop.
He's a University of Miami product.
Rick Barry.
Rick Barry is correct. Nice.
All right.
See that right there? Just quick timeout because we got time. That right there, what you just did, is what impresses Canty and I the most.
What?
How you go? You get Rick Barry from Miami.
Yeah, because all he has to say is Miami, and boom, Instantly, you know what's Rick Barry.
I mean, Rick Barry is the greatest player to ever come out of University of Miami.
Yeah, but you say that,
we're not arguing that, Dave, but the fact that it just popped into your head. Like, I don't necessarily associate Rick Barry with U of M.
Okay.
I just don't.
I'll take the compliment. Thank you very much, Rick.
I thought Warren Sapp.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm saying? The Rock. Anybody but Rick Barry.
Yeah. Warren Sapp's ABA career, not great. All right, Andy, question three.
Question three is, who was the first ever black or brown coach in the NBA?
It wasn't Bill Russell?
It was Bill Russell.
Nice.
CC coming through.
Player coach, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, 1966. And finally, who is the only NBA player to have his number retired by the Harlem Globetrotters?
Oh, I know this. Oh, my God.
You know this?
I feel like I just...
Is it Wilt?
Wilt Chamberlain played for them 58 to 59. They retired his number after his death in 2000. 4 for 4, guys. Stay healthy. Stay healthy. And let's go, Islanders.
There you go. All right, Andy, good stuff. Nice questions. We bring him in every Tuesday, 10 o'clock, and that, of course, is Mike Tenenbaum. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. How are we doing?
We're hanging in there. Obviously, a lot of Giants conversation today, and I think we're being realistic, and I think we're being fair. Frustrated with the loss. Obviously, a couple of plays that you wish you had back. Getting to the 4-yard line to start a drive and not getting a touchdown is upsetting. The pick at the end of a 19-play drive, very upsetting. But overall, I think we're being fair. And yes, it's a loss that stinks, and they had opportunities to win. But I thought, and I want to know your take, the Giants had a lot of positives from last night's game.
Yeah, no question about it. I think the biggest positives were they were competitive. They played with a lot of energy. With that said, the biggest concern, if we go back a year ago, the conversation we had, like most people did, was Daniel Jones and his proclivities to turn the ball over. He had 23 a year ago, second most in the league. And it was a really weird game. You know, the Giants only had 3 drives in the second half. And obviously the big one was the 19-play drive that ended with the pick. And that's oftentimes the difference between winning and losing. But I thought their lack of talent showed up, but I thought they were really well coached and thought they played with energy. And overall, I thought there were things to be encouraged. But when the opposition converts 53% third down and you give up 100 yards to a backup running back and Benny Snell, those would be the things I'd be concerned about.
Mike, when you look at this Pittsburgh Steelers team and you know, having a chance to see Ben come back from the elbow surgery, what are your expectations now for this Steelers team?
Yeah, I'm still, you know, very cautious, Rick, just because he's 38 years old. I thought he played better as the game went on. There was clearly a lot of rust there, but you could just tell that he knew, like, for example, when it was cover zero, meaning that there was going to be more rushers coming than there were defenders, and he was able to bail out and still make a touchdown throw. So I think mentally it's still there. It's just physically it's going to take a while. And again, in that division, Rick, I think clearly, like, he's at best the third best quarterback. You know, I would take Lamar Jackson before him. I know it's only one game, but Joe Burrow, obviously the arrow is up on him. You know, Baker Mayfield, obviously, you know, there's some concerns there, but he's 38. He's made a lot of money. He's won championships. So, you know, we'll see how the year goes for him.
Mr. T, Evan Engram is a player that the jury is still out on even after his first 3 seasons with Big Blue. Going into year 4, you'd like to see more in his season debut. He looked like a liability for the Giants yesterday. What's your evaluation on the player?
You know, Chris, as a former defensive lineman, like, there's such a bullseye on him. When they ask him to pass protect, it's unbelievable that there was a couple times, and it happens, it wasn't only him, but Tuilolo gave up a sack as well. He can't pass protect, and I don't know why they ask him to do it. He's terrible at it. Most tight ends are. It's definitely a concern. You know, when you think about it, he had 7 targets, only 2 receptions, so I would have a huge question mark on him. I don't know if he fits the Joe Judge sort of style that we saw kind of fly all over the field last night, which, again, are great reasons to be encouraged. I don't know if Engram really fits with, like, what they're doing long term.
Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So, obviously, Barkley did not get anything done last night. He had one decent pass catch, did very little outside of that. Was it a product of he wasn't good? Was it the offensive line that wasn't good, or was it a combination of both?
I think their offensive line is going to be better in pass protection than it is going to be in the run game, and that kind of showed up. You know, Nick Gates, I think, is average. I like their guards. Cam Fleming's just going to be, you know, an average kind of hold the fort guy. I just think it's going to take some time, especially in the run game. I think that's a really good front they're going against. That front seven arguably is the best in the NFL. But look, when you have Saquon Barkley, he's averaging 0.4 yards a rush. That is concerning. We saw his explosive show in the pass game. I thought he looked dynamic, hard to tackle in space, and they got to figure out ways for him to get his touches. So, well, you know, if we talked a year ago and we said the offensive line was catastrophic, it's not that bad, so it's definitely going in the right direction. I think Andrew Thomas will be absolutely fine, but the run game blocking has to get better.
Yeah, but Mike, you drafted him with a second overall pick, and I understand you need to get him in space, but does his running style, does that concern you a little bit? I mean, all the dancing, like, there's something to be said, and Canty says this. I mean, he's won a Super Bowl. There is you know, something to be said about a 3 or 4 yard run as opposed to always trying to break it for a home run.
Rick, that's a great point. Coach Parcells always coach Curtis Martin. They always say, hey, Kurt, run for first downs, not touchdowns. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, meaning that, you know, get the first down. A 4 yard gain sometimes is better than, like you said, you know, these negative plays, which just could kill you. So I think part of it is his natural running style, which you don't want to take away his home run ability. So it's probably somewhere in the middle. And I think you could coach that out of him in terms of, you know, staying with your primary read probably longer a couple times. But again, just to be fair here, you know, you were talking about a really, really talented front seven.
Mr. T, would you make a Jason Garrett's debut as Big Blue's play caller on offense?
I thought it was good. I thought he mixed it up. I thought, you know, again, when you look at the quarterback, if you took out a couple of those plays, which is obviously a big if, I thought Daniel Jones looked better. I thought he looked more efficient, confident. I thought he had good arm strength. So they took their shots a couple times. I thought Slayton really looked good. I thought he played with a lot of juice. So I think it's heading in the right direction. And again, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, again, we're in the first inning here, guys. And in fairness, you know, no preseason games, nothing. So overall, I thought it was encouraging.
Let's analyze the left tackles a little bit. Mike Tenenbaum with us, 98.7 ESPN. Both the Jets and the Giants, brand new left tackles, first round picks. Giants go Thomas 4, Jets go Becton, I believe at 11. What do you think overall of both of these guys in their debuts?
Yeah, I think they're different players, even though they're both first round tackles, because Becton just has a chance to be physically dominant in the run game. He's just not as athletic as Andrew Thomas, but I thought they both, again, for first games, acquitted themselves pretty well. And I think Andrew Thomas, he really reminds me a lot of DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who we had at the Jets, which is a long lever guy, really fluid athlete, maybe not perfect in the run game, but to play football, Dave, in 2020, I think you're going to look back as a Giant fan, be like, say, hey, for the next 5, 6, 7 years, we're really glad we have Andrew Thomas at left tackle. And let's face it, that's been something that's been hard to say lately, especially given what's happened with Nate Solder and kind of the turnstile that's been there. So I think both players will turn out to be good players, but to me, stylistically, they're certainly different.
Mike Tenenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike, I didn't want to have to bring it up just because it still makes me sick to my stomach, but we have you, so I'll ask you. What did you think about I'm not even going to ask you about the Jets' performance because it was disgusting, but what did you think
about
Sam?
About the Jets. Go ahead.
What did you think about Sam Darnold in his week one game?
I thought he actually played better as the game went on. Here's the part that was really alarming to me, guys. 23 yards on their first four drives, and that's really hard to do. So he needs to play better. The whole team needs to play better. And, you know, Jamerson Crowder was clearly their best player, and he's the one guy that can turn a small play into a big play. But they have to figure out a way how to convert third downs, and especially if it's going to be without Lev Bell, to me, that has to be Crowder. That has to be Chris Herndon, because they can't rush the passer consistently. So their best chance to win is to, they have to convert some of those third downs. And, you know, we saw the best and worst of Josh Allen. I mean, their first five drives, it was either a touchdown or a fumble. So they were fortunate that those turnovers kept them in the game to a certain extent. But to me, they have to fix their third down offense, because that will give them a chance to really cover up their weaknesses on defense.
Mr. T, I know Adam Gase is your guy, but it's hard for me to believe that he's going to get things turned around when he says what he said about Sunday's game, and that he wouldn't change any of his play calls that he had based on the defenses that he was looking at from the Bills. I guess when you start trying to figure out how to fix the issues, if you can't look at things that you're not doing in order to put your players in positions where they can be successful, how can you have any hope that things are going to change?
Yeah, you know, Chris, that's really fair. If you just take Adam, you know, at what he said at face value, I could just say working with him, nobody's tougher on Adam than himself. And I can promise you, like, knowing him, he probably hasn't left the building in Florham Park since they got back. So I'm sure he's taking a long look at, you know, what he could do better as a play caller and give them a better chance to win. So, yeah, look, we could all look at it and say it wasn't good enough, wasn't acceptable. And hopefully they'll start turning around because there are some pieces there. The quarterback, a dynamic slot receiver, a really good left tackle. You know, Lev Bell is certainly a top 10 running back. We're in that conversation. That's certainly debatable. So hopefully it starts getting better for them quickly.
DCR with you, 98.7 ESPN. Mike Tenenbaum with us here, as he will be every Tuesday at 10 o'clock. So Brady, week one, he was not good. That offense didn't look good. I know Mike Evans certainly a little bit banged up. But is there reason for any concern, or you expect that Tampa and Brady and Arians will get rolling at some point soon?
Yeah, you know, it's something that we've discussed. You know, if two people are going in for a test and one person was able to study for 10,000 hours and the other person couldn't study at all, we're going to bet on the person that had 10,000 hours to study. And that's really the difference between that game between Brees and Brady. You know, Brees and Sean Payton have been together for over 10 years, and that was the first time they were together. I think the Mike Evans interception was lack of repetition. I thought the pick six was a bad decision and a terrible throw to throw it outside the numbers late in the down. You have to throw that ball away, and he's going from the far hash, which makes it even a more difficult throw. So I think when it's all said and done, Tampa Bay will be there. You know, again, if you think about it this way, if there's seven teams that make the playoffs, they should make it. And if we're sitting here in September, guys, that's 5 months from now. And I think 5 months of repetition will only make that Tampa Bay offense better.
I will say, Mike, though, there is one test that less experience is actually to your benefit. So he brought up Tampa. I want to bring up, I mean, whenever you talk about Tampa Bay, you're naturally going to bring up what happened in New England. I mean, were you at all surprised, or was that what you expected to see from that offense and Cam Newton?
No, that's so intriguing to me. I wasn't surprised at all. And I think it's going to be more interesting and more diverse. Again, I think they're going to win the division. I think he's going to be the comeback player of the year. I think they're going to be talking about an extension there within weeks because – when you go back to, like, Josh McDaniels, their offensive coordinator, Rick, in 2010, he drafted Tim Tebow in the first round. Like, so you know philosophically there's a lot of alignment there. And I think they're just going to make it each week, build on it. I think some weeks you'll see more of the screen game. And even if you think about it, like, some of the RPOs there, they were just, like, regular options where he would put the ball in the belly of the back and then pull it. There's so much more you can do. They had direct quarterback runs, which is a pain in the neck. Look, I've been fortunate, guys. I've worked with Parcells, Belichick, Mangini, Rex Ryan. All four of those guys would say the same exact thing. And, Chris, you know this as a defensive player. When the quarterback can make plays with his feet, it screws up your spacing and it screws up your gap responsibilities. And you put Cam Newton one-on-one with anybody at his size and athleticism, that's a tough matchup. And I think if you're a Patriot fan, a guy you really got to keep an eye on is Enkeel Harry. He was their first-round pick a year ago. Wide receiver, if he could develop even into a B guys, they'll be really hard to beat on offense.
Yeah, he can't fumble that ball going into the end zone, though, Mr. T. He just can't. That can't happen.
That was a great play by Jerome Baker, who I happen to like a lot, undersized linebacker from Ohio State that could really run and hit. But you're right, Harry can't fumble the ball there.
Yeah. Mr. T, I guess the biggest upset of the weekend had to be out in Santa Clara with the Cardinals getting a win over their division rival, the 49ers. I mean, it's a crowded NFC West with the Rams and the Seahawks out there as well. But what exactly is the ceiling of this Arizona Cardinals team?
Yeah, it's really interesting. They're going to be a hard out because early on, and we talked about this, guys, in August, which is it's tackling will be at a premium, especially early on. We saw a number of missed tackles. And with someone athletically like Kyle Murray, we saw, you know, just made a very good 49er defense look bad. So you add DeAndre Hopkins to that group of receivers. They're going to be a hard out just because they could score points. Their offensive line, I think, is just okay. And I think teams will catch up to them a little bit. And if they were in another division, I'd probably like them a little bit more. But they are intriguing. I still see them, despite Sunday's game, behind San Francisco and certainly behind Seattle.
Last one for me, Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. And I know they lost, and the kicker was just, it was awful at the end. But I really like what I saw from Joe Burrow in week one. You agree? I mean, he looked in spots terrific in that game, under duress for most of the game.
Yeah, and you know, I was fortunate enough to see him against Georgia live last year, and it was the first time I realized like what an athlete this guy is. And I was, I think people will be surprised to see that not only can he throw, but boy, he can run and make plays with his feet. So, yeah, but for an OPI call there, that was probably right, but certainly somewhat questionable. And that missed field goal, that could have been the story of the week. And again, I think you look at that division and you say, wow, you know, Lamar Jackson, dynamic. Joe Burrow, the future is there. And, you know, now all of a sudden, like, who's the next best quarterback? And I think that's what gives our sport such great hope is Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Kyle Murray. Now we're talking about maybe Joe Burrow. Like, there's so many great young quarterbacks. And I think that's why the health of our sport is so bright.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here in the show. Mike, it can't be just the smoothies that you're drinking every morning. I mean, you need to tell me, because every time you come on with us, the level of energy is through the roof. Like, what's the secret? I need it.
Yeah, Rick, no, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's something called X2, which is an all-natural, healthy energy drink that actually enhances endurance naturally. And when I was a GM, I saw some of our players use it. And you can get it at x2performance.com, and you should try it as a former professional athlete, because it actually enhances endurance in a natural and safe way. So give it a shot. It's something I take every day. So when I'm on the show, I could stay toe-to-toe with all three of you guys. So I appreciate you asking.
Yeah, you should do the Jets a favor and ship them a couple of cases.
Well, let's just say they may have tried it in the past, so I don't know if they're still using it, but it's certainly, I know it's effective because I use it every day, Chris.
Mr. T, last question for me. I know some people are more surprised at the outcome down in D.C. than we were after talking on the Sunday show, but I got to ask you, the complexion of the game threw me off a little bit, and it gave me some concerns about Carson Wentz, because here you have a quarterback that a lot of people would say is a top 10 kind of guy. He's got a double-digit lead on the road against a division opponent, and he ends up losing that game. Are you a little bit surprised in how Carson Wentz played in the second half of that game against Washington?
So Rick and Dave, let me give our friend Chris the ultimate plug here, which is the absolute truth, because you could roll back the tape. When we did the Sunday morning preview show, Chris unilaterally brought up the change in Washington and the change in culture. And we talked about not only off the field and all the things going on, but also on the field with Coach Rivera. And Chris, I think Coach Rivera and Jack Del Rio deserve so much credit, because I think they showed mental toughness and perseverance from a standpoint. They got down 17-0. So I think there are some issues in Philly with three offensive linemen being hurt. They lost Brandon Brooks. They've lost Lane Johnson. They lost Andre Dillard. So I think Philly definitely has some issues. But we got to tip our caps, guys, to Washington, because – you're down 17-0, you know, anytime, but you got a very young quarterback, never been with this coaching staff before. So I think it says a lot more about Coach Rivera and their leadership. And boy, that anybody that's playing Washington this year, they have 5 first-round picks on that defensive line. And I think they're going to be a hard out for a lot of teams.
All right, Mike, we appreciate it. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy the X2 energy drink, and we appreciate a couple minutes. Good stuff.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. That, of course, Mike Tannenbaum. So that must be terrific, Chris. You get 3 hours on Sunday mornings with him, and then you get him on Tuesday with us as well.
Oh, that's a great listen, Dave. I mean, you got to tune in from 8 to 11 on Sunday mornings. Mike T and I dive into it. We're breaking down all the matchups. It's awesome.
Well, speaking of all the matchups, I have our standings here after week one. Just pull this up here. Rick,
don't even start. I got robbed last night. We all know that was a great pick.
Steven Gostkowski. How about Steven
Gostkowski? Take your socks off after the first missed field goal. You haven't been kicking with socks on. Take the socks off. Idiot.
So how about this? This is an amazing stat. He went into the game last night as the most accurate percentage-wise kicker in the history of the NFL. Comes out of the game last night as the 9th most accurate kicker in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, and he cost me the cover. Listen, it wasn't even okay. You missed the field goals. Fine. It was the extra point that ended up killing me in the end.
Yeah, killed you.
And nothing. Can Tannehill? I hate even saying his name because I got this real weird feeling that Sam Darnold is going to end up turning into Ryan Tannehill.
Where he flames out. Somewhere else?
Well, he never reaches his potential because Gase sucks, and then all of a sudden he goes to another team that actually has pieces in place that can get the best out of him, and he has his success with another team and signs a big deal.
Yeah,
but that's besides the point.
So for housekeeping, 0-2-1 for you yesterday?
Yeah, 0-2-1.
0-2-1.
You got Brown wide open in the end zone. Can we drop a pass for a touchdown?
Though, no?
You have to dive for it. I mean, you got to make a better throw.
Could have made a little more effort. And can I ask you this? What is Vic Fangio doing?
He has no idea. He still doesn't know.
There's a minute to go. You have three timeouts. They're playing for, well, I guess they went for a touchdown, but you can hold them to a field goal. All you have to do is get, realistically to the other 40. Why is he not taking timeouts? What is Vic Fangio doing at the end of that game?
Well, he was going to take a timeout, but then the running back got tackled out of bounds, and he's going to take another timeout, but they went out of, it was an incomplete pass, I think he said. But he was just counting on the fact that Gostkowski was going to miss another field goal.
Did you think he was going to miss that? Come on.
No. We didn't want them to get close. But I don't even care. It's your job as a head coach. As bad as Gostkowski's been, just plan on in your mind. He's a professional kicker. He's historically been one of the best kickers, and he's eventually going to make one. So let's at least give ourselves time, if he does kick a field goal, to actually be able to go down the field. And
even if he misses it. All right, so now you have 40 seconds. Odds are you're going to be able to run out the clock. You punt it away. They're not going to get a field goal anyway.
It was ridiculous.
It was awful. That was horrendous clock management. If Joe Judge did that, because I've been calm today, if he did that and we turned on the radio, I'd be crazy this morning. Nuts.
You were all serious this morning, though. I didn't like it.
Why?
Well, because usually you ask us how things are going, how was your
night. Yeah, you go around the horn at the beginning of the show, Dave.
Serious stuff. I haven't watched the Giants play a relevant game in a long time.
I
thought
usually,
you would be more excited,
foreplay.
Though.
A little upbeat. Foreplay.
Yeah.
No, I wanted to get right to it.
Tease us a little bit.
No, right to it.
You went straight into it. You want to break everything down? You're going play by play?
Speaking of getting right to it, Dave, $2.4 billion?
$2.4 billion.
Ooh.
That is the best thing that happened yesterday. Ooh. In my entire day.
Can I tell you the best thing that happened? I don't know if people realize this or not. That once he gets the 23 of 30 votes.
Which he clearly will. Okay, now, let me ask you this. It's 23 of 30. So the Mets vote?
The Mets are voting yes. They would like the 2.4. They would enjoy having the $2.4 billion.
Yes. Straight.
Do you realize, Dave? I think you probably do. Canty probably does as well. Because we watch and see everything. That the second he takes full ownership, 95% of this team, he is worth more money than the three next richest baseball owners combined.
Mm.
Yep. Mm, he's got a lot of money.
I heard Passan say that out of all the professional sports teams owners on this continent, he would only be behind Steve Ballmer.
That's it.
That's one guy
that has more money than him.
That's crazy.
He's got $15 billion. And there's two guys now that I want, Rick. Two. Want to know who they are?
I would love to know who they are.
I want Realmuto.
Of course you do.
And I want crazy. I'll just say crazy and leave it at that. Who is it?
Crazy.
He's crazy. At a minimum, he's quirky. Up to crazy.
At a minimum, he's quirky.
At a minimum. Very outspoken.
Very outspoken. Trevor Bauer.
There you go. I want both.
Frankie Lindor. I want Francisco Lindor.
I want all of them.
Did you see this new report too? That it looks like they're gonna try to stick Rosario in center field next year.
Oh God,
because that'll go well.
Because that'll go well. No, I'm
you guys are
so
always trying to turn
this.
Infielders into outfielders. What gives, man? Cut that out.
Because we're so well put together. Have you ever given a 1 year old
more if Steve Cohen takes over because you got an owner that can outspend the mistakes that Brody Van Wagenen has already made. He can outspend them.
Yep. Have you ever given a 1 year old a Mr. Potato Head and said, put it together? That's what this Mets team looks like.
The arm goes where the nose is.
Yeah, it'll be up his nose in about 15 minutes. hosting the Islanders in the Stanley Cup Conference Finals, and MSG Plus has a complete live coverage before every and after every single game. Tonight, 7:30, get ready for Game 5 against the Lightning with the team that's been with you all season long, Shannon, Butch, and AJ, as they preview the matchup on the Islanders game night. Then immediately after Game 5, tune back to MSG Plus for complete coverage, including in-depth analysis and player interviews. Your team, your network, MSG Plus, your home for Islanders Stanley Cup playoff coverage before and after every game. All right, let's start there. Move on from football a little bit for a couple of minutes. And how you feeling? Game 5 tonight, did the Islanders find a way to force a Game 6, or does the season end tonight?
I mean, you're talking about one of the more resilient teams that we've seen in a while. Like, this team has found a way to bounce back. Tampa's a good team, man. Do I expect them to win tonight?
Yeah, you think we'll be talking about it tomorrow and talking about it in Game 6.
I will go out on a limb and say I expect the Islanders to win tonight, yeah.
Nice.
Ooh. Can I get a caw too, by the way, Mungie? Can
you
I get a
caw? Breaking? He nah, might not have caw ready breaking. To go.
Find the caw for me, would you? This is NHL related. This is not breaking, but I mean, since you brought up the NHL, I figured I would let people know. Caw. Peter Laviolette has been hired as the Washington Capitals.
Oh, there you go. He had it.
I mean, how long do I need to wait to get it?
Yeah, he had to wait for a minute on that.
He didn't know it was coming, and he wasn't prepared with it. This is not his normal show. He probably didn't have it ready to go. I don't blame Brian for that.
Also, another valid point.
Yeah, I mean, excellent point. So I just did it myself. Peter Laviolette, new head coach of the Washington Capitals. There we go.
There you go.
Signs a 3-year deal. And if he needs an assistant to the assistant, I am very available.
So you would go coach the Capitals?
In a heartbeat. I would go get him his coffee.
And you would just leave us. Pick up and go.
Our show is only 2 hours. We're working from home now. I could do both.
They're in D.C.
That's fine. I'm not in the studio now, am I?
So you're going to start doing the show from
D.C.?
Another
great point by Rick.
You have a newborn.
I've done the show from Tampa. Yeah. I can do the show from anywhere.
So move to D.C., do the show from there, work as the assistant to the assistant, and there you go.
What would make me any different than Peter Rosenberg? All he wants to talk about is Washington sports anyway.
Yeah.
And he's on the number one show in New York.
That's a fair point. And he was walking with his chest held high
Advantage
huh?
DiPietro right now.
Oh, my God.
I feel like I'm watching a tennis match between you two with this conversation.
Yeah, so if he needs someone to get him his coffee, break down film, whatever he needs, go get him his lunch.
He's a good coach, Laviolette, too.
Really good coach.
Really good coach. All right, so, Chris, because we haven't talked a lot of Yankees lately. Football's really, been the dominant topic, but it feels like they've righted the ship and starting to get healthy. And right, you must feel much better today than you did last week about this team.
Oh, yeah, I feel better today than I did last week. I mean, they finished up a 4-game sweep of the O's, and I feel like we put them in the rearview mirror, and now we've got a 3-game set against the Blue Jays. So this is going to be big for us. I mean, we were talking about the Yankees being a team that, at the least would be a wild card, team, but now you're talking about them being able to finish in the top two in the AL East. So hopefully they're able to do that. They're able to gain some ground on the Blue Jays. We'll see what ends up happening with this set this week. But I feel good about where the Yankees are at right now. Feels like the offense is kind of turning the corner, and you had really solid starting pitching throughout the course of the weekend, and you didn't have any meltdowns from the bullpen. So I think that the Yankees are in a good spot. Based on how they were playing this weekend, I feel good about what we're going to do this week.
That's been the biggest key for them, too. The starting pitching has been really good.
Mm-hmm.
Gerrit Cole stepped up.
Montgomery actually had a good start.
Yeah, which is nice. And then you got Globo Jim Glaber. With the glasses on, all of a sudden turn it back into what we expected offensively. I had a CMT, too, by the way. You didn't even ask.
You need to say something.
Well, I just figured Tuesday and Fridays were CMTs. Or Tuesdays and Thursdays were CMTs.
I didn't get that memo.
I had one.
Well, why didn't you say?
I didn't know. I was assuming that you knew that I had a CMT.
Well, why
would
you
assume? Like a recap of the football. I can't do one on Monday because we still got Monday Night Football.
Right. All right, well, I mean, we could do a CMT next.
Do we have time?
We do. There's always time.
Can we be quick?
We can be quick.
All right, let's do it then.
Well, all right, so we'll continue this conversation, get to the NBA, break, come back, and do a CMT.
I love it.
Okay, that's what we'll do.
It's a nice little finish to the show. A little CMT action.
I love the CMT.
Right into the premature Pirates.
That's right. who do they have today from our show? Do they have anybody? Frank Gore, 11:30, Jay Williams, 12. So they haven't stolen anybody from our show.
Starting running back for the New York Jets. And by the way, how about Bart? I would love to have been in Bart's class, him grading papers. He was giving the Jets C minuses.
C minuses?
Yeah, C's, C minuses. No D's, no nothing.
No. They were F's across the board. Yeah,
what
I can't
was
I see.
To, what was there to be positive about in that Jets game?
A C means average. What were the Jets average with on Sunday?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Were they coached average?
No.
Was their quarterback average?
No.
Was their offense average?
No.
Was their defense average?
No.
No. They were special teams average?
No.
No. They were awful.
Yeah, there was. I mean, you didn't have enough players too that played really well to get the average up.
No. He's drinking that Ecto cooler right now. ain't nothing average about the Jets.
He's trying to make sure his Colts
NFL team.
He's trying to make sure his Colts.
They're 32 out of 32 in ESPN's power rankings.
They stink.
They're dead last.
We watched every single game this weekend. Right, 16 games over the course of the weekend. Was there anybody that was worse than the Jets? Even the Browns? I would say
Browns
no.
Were bad.
No, not even the Browns.
But at least the Browns. The Browns were down 10-0 and scored a touchdown.
No, I know, and that's a team that could win the Super Bowl. I know, I get it. You know, you're not wrong. I mean, I made the mistake of watching some of it again this morning too, which was a mistake.
No wonder you're in such a mood today.
Well, no, I'll tell you what I was mood. The baby finally slept. He slept really good last night, and of course, I mean, just typical 2020 fashion, the alarm goes off at 4:30 this morning.
No.
This alarm is aggressive, dude. Like,
now, what do you say,
turn it on?
2020 fashion? You set the alarm.
Yeah, but I set it, not to have it go off for no reason. I come bombing out of the bedroom like this is The Walking Dead. I got a shotgun. I got a baseball bat.
Oh, your house alarm.
Yes, my house alarm.
I thought
phone
you meant
alarm.
Just the alarm.
No, my house alarm.
Well, what happened?
I have no idea. I come rolling down with a shotgun and a baseball bat like I'm going with, like all hell was going to break loose.
You'll appreciate this. I actually set the alarm off during the Giants game last night.
What, from jumping around?
Yeah. I jumped and the back door opened a little bit. Scared
how much
everybody
do
to
you
death.
How much do you weigh currently that the back door opened when you jumped?
Well, I jumped off the table.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. Well, we have a little coffee table in front of the couch, and I was standing on that at one point in a big third down play. They stopped them. I jumped off in excitement, and the back door opened a little.
You are an animal.
Yeah.
I was standing on the coffee table.
It was a big third down play. It was a huge, and they stopped them. Good pressure on Roethlisberger. Today on ESPN Daily, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tips off tonight. Dan Lebatard joins Pablo to talk about the Heat-Celtics rivalry that developed a decade ago. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. Now streaming Disney's new movie, Mulan. Experience the legend of Mulan as she fights to defend her family and the kingdom. Available to Disney Plus subscribers who unlock Premier Access. And also want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app. Or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. All right, you wanted CMT? You have it. Here's CMT.
All right, here we go, fellas. A little NFL edition to CMT. Maybe we'll do half today, half tomorrow. Got quite a few here. All right, give me what you guys think. The worst loss of week one. I'm going to give you Philly, I'm going to give you Indy, and I'm going to give you the Niners.
All right, I'm going to start
Who's starting, me or Dave?
Either one. I'll start, and then we'll go to you for this one. I'm going to start by telling you that Philadelphia, and not because of the opponent, because I think Washington's actually going to be a lot better and their defense is good. You led 17-0. You led 17-0, and you were outscored 27 consecutive at the end. So I'm going to marry Philadelphia. I'm going to cuddle Indianapolis because you can't lose to Jacksonville.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
For almost the entirety of the game. And I will trash San Francisco. Not a great loss, certainly, but Arizona's a good team. They were very competitive in that game, the Niners. So that's my order.
Okay, I'm going to marry Indy as being the worst loss. I mean, you can't lose to a team that's actively trying to lose to get the number one overall pick. Like, that just can't happen. Jacksonville punted on the season way before the players got to training camp. So that's the part that's egregious. Indy was a team we thought could contend for the AFC South crown. I'm going to cuddle Philly because even though I don't think Washington should be bad, I can't stomach having a double-digit lead on the road and then finding a way to blow that game. And then I'm going to trash the 49ers loss because I think the Cardinals are actually a good team.
All right, here we go. Next one, Canty, you're up first. Most important win. Most important win of week one. I'm going to give you Cam Newton and the Patriots. I'm going to give you Canty's favorite, Mitch Trubisky and the Bears. And then we saw it last night, 26-16, Big Ben and the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay, I am going to I'm going to go with the Steelers being the most important win. I'm going to marry that one just from a confidence-building standpoint. Ben Roethlisberger, after not playing football essentially for an entire year, not throwing a touchdown pass since 2018, having the opportunity to have three touchdowns, no turnovers, and being able to win that game, I think that's going to be huge for him, but also for the confidence that his teammates have in him. So I'm going to say that's the most important win. I'm going to cuddle up to the Pats win. I think that was important for Cam Newton, you know, the way that Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels used him to be able to hold up 15 rush attempts. He didn't come out with any nicks or bruises. So the fact that he can do it and he put it on tape, it's going to make it hard for opposing defenses to get ready for them. And I'm going to trash the Bears win because guess what? I still don't think Mitch Trubisky is any good. And I think they'd be better served with trying to find another quarterback. So I'm going to trash that one.
All right. So we can just continue quickly. I'm going to marry the Bears because I think that's the team that needed to win the most. I'm going to cuddle Pittsburgh, and I will trash the Patriots because they're going to be fine regardless. One more, Rick. One more.
Here we go. I'm going to give you best performance by a quarterback. Lamar Jackson, 20 of 25, 275 yards, 3 TDs. Aaron Rodgers, 32 of 44, 364, 4 TDs. Oh, Russell Wilson, 31 of 35. For 322 and 4 TDs.
All right, I'm marrying Rodgers. He was unbelievable. Wilson was also sensational. I will cuddle him, and I will trash Lamar, who was good, but not in the class of those other two.
Agreed across the board.
How about that?
Nice one.
Boom. How about that? That was really, really well done.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.